Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
This meeting is being recorded.
Tonight, we'll go back in time to seasons past, when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score that would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight, we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats, football history and its memorabilia on the Sports History Network. We're live from the Southport, North Carolina home of Gridiron Greats Magazine. And I'm Bob Swick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats Magazine is the only publication in America that focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 150 plus years of football history and memorabilia, and you can find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. It is at this time I'd like to introduce my co-host, the senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Larger. He hails from Portland, Oregon, Mr. Joe Squires. Joe, welcome to the show this afternoon.
I know I say it all the time, but your intro never gets old. I love it. I always assumed you'd have it memorized by now, but I see you glancing down at your script.
I still have to glance down. A couple of sentences, even though I should be able to say it in my sleep. I want to make sure I'm doing a good job and getting everything correctly.
And I still hit the, where it used to say Wallingford, Connecticut. I got to the point where even I know that. I'm still getting used to the South Carolina,
Right. Yeah. I really have to stop myself because I've said that for whatever it was, 12, 13 years. And to say, from the Southport, North Carolina home of Gridiron Greats Magazine, it's a lot different. It was a lot different.
We need to come up with a name because you know, Wallingford, Connecticut, you know, where you live, it's like Air Force One. Wherever you are is the home of Gridiron Greats. Like whatever plane the president is on is Air Force One. So wherever the captain sits is the mecca of football collecting. So we need to come up with something from the mecca of football card collecting in South Carolina. We need to come up with something.
North Carolina, not South Carolina.
North Carolina, I beg your pardon.
People get confused because they say, are you in Northport, South Carolina? And I said, no, it's Southport, North Carolina. And then it's confusion right away. You know, it was interesting because yesterday, believe it or not, was our second year anniversary of moving into this house. We had our good friends from Connecticut who actually live literally down the street from us over for dinner. And we were reminiscing about, a two-year anniversary. It was pretty amazing how you snap your fingers and 2 years have gone by. And unfortunately, I still haven't unloaded all my boxes yet. I still have one big box that I have not opened. And I think part of my problem is I don't have enough bookcases or display cases that I can get that stuff out and put it. And I don't even want to show you the left-hand side over here. I have four piles of sports magazines just packed, just stacked there. I took them out of the boxes I had them in, and they're still sitting there. I'm still sorting them out. All right, let's get started into the heart of our show today. Let's go over a couple auctions that you were mentioning beforehand. Let's look at them.
Well, I've given up on the shared screen thing because I have to fumble around, on the. We almost need an assistant. One of these days, we need to find the budget in the Gridiron Greats podcast, to hire a producer.
Okay.
All right.
Hopefully that'll happen before I pass away. So we'll see
what happens. Well, Heritage Auction, which seems to continually be running a monthly auction, you know, but finds some amazing football items, had something sell. I've mentioned a few times, I've rekindled my wax collection probably 5-6 years ago, and I'm really loving it, just finding rare. You can see over my shoulder, my on a wax pack display that, and I've got another one I bought that's sitting over there that I, again, like you said, won't bother to show you. So I plan on putting both of those up here, as, you know, kind of like your unboxing, as soon as I can, you know, find the time on the weekends. But Heritage had an auction that just shot off that had some amazing unopened wax pack boxes. One of them was, I mentioned, you know, I was, you know, catching up with you, you know, a couple weeks ago, that one of them was the 1973 Topps football wax packs box was set with 24 unopened packs. Franco Harris, you know, Kenny the Snake Stabler's rookie year. Not a huge, you know, when you think 70 sets, you go 71, 72, 79. I mean, there's so many sets. I mean, I would say 73 and 74 are probably the ugliest sets in the 70s. So to me, why is 1973 so popular? This box sold for $31,200.
Oh, my word.
That is literally 1,400 a pack. Plus the
crazy.
I am missing this 170s box, so I was eyeing this, and I spent a lot of time looking up the history of previous sales. In 2019, one of these boxes sold for $11,000. In 2021, one sold for $14,000. And in 2022, one sold for $23,000. So I was like, well, hopefully the market has been saturated. Everybody who wants one of these 73 boxes, unopened wax boxes, has it. And this one will slip through the cracks. Obviously, it did not. It went for the highest price in history of a 73 Topps unopened wax box.
Wow.
So,
wow. I'm just blown away because, again, I know you got the Harris, you got Stabler, you got some semi, you know, stars in there. Oh man, I just don't get it. $1,500 for a wax pack, it just blows my mind.
In comparison, like 1976, when you think of 76 wax, immediately Walter Payton
right
comes to mind. A unopened wax packs box of 1976 will cost you between $17,000 and $19,000. So this is 60, 70% higher than a 1976 wax box.
Right.
It's three times what a 75 wax box will cost you.
Right.
It's nearly double what a 72 wax box would cost you.
Right.
I mean, this is such a weird set. And for some reason, it's incredibly rare. And you'd mentioned this is the first time they didn't issue it in series. So, right. I mean, the whole set is in it.
1973 was the first year Topps just had one series. So everything was issued all at once.
Yes.
And you were able to buy a complete set, what was considered today being a factory set. So what I kind of don't understand in a way is I look at 73 to 1979. That's the end of the 70s era. Okay. 79 is the last year. I know there is demand for 70, 71, 72. That's a given. 72 high, third series is always going to be in demand. I don't ever see any type of lowering of prices for that series, so on and so forth. But what I don't understand is what you just gave me, with the exception of the 76 set, which you have Walter Payton. That's truly one of the purest rookie cards around. And it's one of the most demand cards. It is Payton, so on and so forth.
Outside of the Largent card in 77, obviously, Bob, that goes without
I stand corrected on that, with that coming in a very, very close second. But in any event, I never could understand that demand. And this, when you talked about it last time, I remember I worked for a couple of years in a small card shop in Meriden, Connecticut. This is back in the 90s, back in the explosion days. And the owner always used to tell me that he always felt that in the 70s, you should put together as many 73 to 79 Topps football sets together. And this was before the explosion of Peyton and so on and so forth. So long story short, his theory of it was there wasn't that much wax around at that time, back in 1990, 91, 92, unopened of the 70s. So your next best bet was to try to put together as many sets together, put them away, and down the road, they're going to only go up in value. Well, what's the one set that went through the roof? 76 tap set, okay, because of the Peyton rookie. And depending on how good your Peyton rookie was in that set, if you had a near mint, you're going to get a premium on it. So, I'm just kind of amazed that that set is going for, I'm sorry, that wax box went for that much. It's just utterly amazing to me to see that.
Yeah. I mean, 60, 70% higher than the last sale and double what the previous high was,
it's amazing. And again, you know, when you reach that price point, the market for your product that if you want to resell that becomes so narrow because your average collector, you know, and I look at myself, even though I'm not an average collector, I will not pay $20,000 for an unopened wax box. Okay. There's no need for me to spend that money. It's not going to do anything for me. I'm not collecting wax packs anymore or wax boxes or anything like that. But the market had become so narrow. Is that good or bad for the hobby? And, you know, and that's the argument. We've talked about this for 20 years. Yeah. If we talked about it, you know, today. Is that good for the hobby? Yes and no. Okay. That's the only way I'm going to put it. You know, if you got the money and you want to spend the money on that kind of wax box, good luck to you. Go for it. But, you know, for an average collector who wants to just put together a 73 top set, no, that becomes, you know, garbled information to the collector as to, you know, how or why they would be putting that set together. So
also, you're acing out new collectors. Because, right. I mean, I remember buying my Walter Payton rookie card, you know, back in, you know, 2006, 2007. I think I paid $3,000-$4,000 for it, which is a lot of money.
Yep.
But, you know, now that same card is $35,000. In fact, there's for auction.
And again, how many people are actually trading that $35,000 Payton rookie card, especially for the guys and gals who want to just put together a 76 set? Yeah. Where do you find an ungraded Payton? I probably got one of the last few ungraded Paytons around here. you know, I've had people say, well, why don't you have it graded? I said, why am I going to have it graded for? I'm not selling the set right now. So, okay, it goes into a, you know, a PSA 9 holder. Okay, who am I going to call? Hey, you know, Joe, so and so, do you want to spend $40,000 for my Peyton rookie card? I want to make sure it has the Swick collection on it, you know, as on the label, so I can get an upshot on it on top of it. I mean, come on, you know, you gotta be realistic about this. And there's not a shortage of 76 tops in the market; it's still there. You know, you can still find paintings. It was not underprinted or anything. I don't know.
Well, it looks like Joey Squires won't be picking up that 1973 wax box, you know, anytime soon. That's only the fourth one that has come to auction in the last, 6 years. Wow. So, oddly enough, maybe they're rarer than we think for some reason. Yep. I mean, who knows? Exactly. Also in that same auction that closed is a 1968 Topps first series cello box with 36 unopened cello packs. 68 stunning set, very rare. Obviously, we're starting to get into some very vintage stuff. 36 cello packs unopened went for $99,000. That included buyer's premium.
$3,000 a pack.
Nearly $3,000 a pack. $3,000 a cello. Wrapped up in that, little security blanket, BBCE shrink wrap.
Yep. Unbelievable.
Yeah. $99,000. My first house I bought in 1994 was $86,000. I had no idea that
I won't tell you what my first house cost because.
Those two unopened wax, obviously unopened wax industry doing very well. Closed on Heritage last week, and Heritage always finding good things. Has an auction that ends in 23 days, and I'll just rattle off a couple things here. 76 Tops Walter Payton SGC 100 as good as it gets. Walter Payton currently at 46,000. That includes the buyer's premium. Joe Montana BGS 10 at 26,000, and its compatriot Joe Montana rookie card PSA 10 at 20,000. So the BGS Pristine 10 is running about 33% more at 26,000 than the PSA 10 at 20,000.
That's interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. I found that interesting. And then another incredible slew of unopened, a 1963 Fleer wax box with 24 unopened packs, currently at 55,000 with 3 weeks to go. A 67 Tops cello box, the ugliest set in the 60s in my opinion, with 36 unopened cello packs, currently at 24,000, reflecting the ugliness of it. And then a second round of 68 Tops first series cello. You know, so obviously they had two of them, currently at 32. So 67,000 to go. A little bit of room on that second box.
Unbelievable. Truly unbelievable.
Yeah. I'm
just shocked at those prices. I really am.
Yeah. But yeah, just some incredible stuff coming up. Just whenever you think it's like, man, that is some incredible auction items. Just Heritage seems to find good stuff. And then in other auction news, Memory Lane ends in 2 days, I believe. I get all my news from Swick Enterprises, so I'm not up to date on it. A 1935 Chipel, number 24 Clark Hinkle PSA 8 rookie card, currently at 4,200. 57 Tops Johnny Yu PSA 8, currently at 7,100. And the card to me that's synonymous with a young mustachioed Bob Swick collecting a 1965 Tops Joey Broadway Namath rookie card in PSA 8, currently at $36,000.
Wow.
Don't you wish you had some of those wax packs now?
Wow. Well, I could only imagine if I graded my Namath what it would come in at. And even if it came in at a 7, it would have, you know, a good chunk of change there. I'm interested, though, I got to watch it, what that Hinkle is going to go for, because that's a Packer. It's a high number. Yeah. And it should be seriously in demand because that's one of the keys to that Packers team set from 35. So
not a very good looking Clark Hinkle. The right border on it, you know, you can look later on. The right border on it's a little shy.
Oh, okay.
Not centered very well. So.
Okay. All right. So then that probably will be at the most maybe a $5,000-$6,000 card. And
I would guess so. And then the marquee item they had, the football item, a 1952 Bowman Large Frank Gifford rookie card in a PSA 9.
Wow.
Only one PSA example graded higher. So there's a 10 out there. It is currently at 22,000. The 52 Bowman set, the number one collected set I know that because of an article I wrote for GG a couple years ago. Frank Gifford, obviously one of the marquees of it, and a PSA 9. Man, it is a good looking card. 22,000. That seems a little light for the most popular.
That'll go up. That definitely go up by the time it's over.
Yep. So a lot of auctions running today right now, and REA opens up in a week. Love of the Game, Gridiron Great Advertiser, Al Crisafulli, Love of the Game. Got an email yesterday looking for consignments. I always try to consign a few things to his auction. I love and support him. So, auction season, Bobby.
We're coming. Super Bowl season 2, so we got a lot of football auctions coming up. right around Super Bowl time over the next few weeks anyways. But it's interesting to see. And again, we talked about this numerous times in the past. Is there a saturation? Doesn't seem like it. It's stuff that is in demand. People are going to still want to bid on it, and they're going to buy it, and that's it. It's amazing. Truly amazing.
How many more 60-year-old wax boxes are hiding in closets that don't belong in collections that are waiting to be discovered? There's only so much wax, you know? Yeah, it's interesting.
Exactly. So you were going to show a few things, but before we get started, I'm going to do my one show and tell today. I have a 1950 complete football magazine with Bob Williams from Notre Dame on the front cover, along with Dan Fogelberg from Army, classic football magazine. I love the back ad for Electric Football.
Is that one of those vibrating games where you plugged it in and you hit the button and it vibrated and the pieces?
Yeah, and the this one, the lights go on. This was the this was actually the Jim Prentice Electric Football game, which was very popular at the time. And it cost a whopping $10 for that set back in that game in 1950. So wow. That was pretty expensive. So yeah. It was a very classic game. Jim Prentice football games still are somewhat in demand, especially obviously if you have the complete box and all the pieces to it. They're pretty cool display pieces, and they're nice to look at the same time. All right, I'm going to hand it off to you. You got some, you did some unpacking, and you found some nice stuff.
You and your periodicals, Bob. I love it. Old magazines around. All right. I talk about my uncut sheet collection quite a bit. My quest for the white whale, the 1935 Chickle uncut sheet. I get the feeling, boy, oh boy, that's a conversation, isn't it? Is that one sheet? Or is it two sheets with a double print, 1 through 24, and then a double print on second series?
Right.
Yeah, those are the mysteries.
Yep.
You know, I guess we'll find out when somebody calls me and goes, "Hey, Joe, I'm at a bazaar in, you know, Kansas, and they've got an uncut sheet here, and they have no idea what it is. So it's marked $10. Do you want it?" That's the phone call I want. One can only daydream. So I love uncut sheets because they can't be doctored. There's no fake signature. There's no trimming. There's no retouching. There's no soaking. You can't fake an uncut sheet. It is the one pure thing in our hobby, I believe.
Right.
So I brought about five or six out that I wanted to share. Obviously, I want to start with the most important. You might recognize this. It's a 1977 Topps. And it's got probably one of the most important rookie cards right there.
There.
You might recognize it.
Right there.
Steve Largent, rookie card.
Steve Largent.
And this is the partial sheet. It's a full sheet, printer mark down below. But it's only half a sheet, and I bought it because of the Largent rookie card. Okay. The Jim Zorn record breaker here. Most yard passing by a rookie. Jim Zorn, left-hander out of Cal Poly. I only know that because I memorized his rookie card when I was a kid. Carl Heller down here. This is just a great sheet. I love it. Mike Webster's rookie card up here, the Steeler great center. '77 had a lot of star power in it.
Right.
And two Paul Jones. Look at this, Dan Pastorini. Do you remember that name?
Yep. Houston Oilers.
Yeah, Houston Oilers, yeah. Harvey Martin. Just a really good uncut sheet. But this is one of my favorites, simply just because of the Steve Largent rookie card in it. And,
Now, recap for our audience real quick. Those were sheets of how many? 132 cards?
132, yeah, 12 by 11. Standard. Issued in four. No, excuse me. Issued in three sheets. Isn't it 396 in that set, in the 77 set, I believe? But check this out. I just noticed it. Vince Papale's rookie card right here.
Right.
Invincible. Just noticed that. I don't know. It's cool. I don't like to take these for granted. Every once in a while, I like to just walk over and, you know, just kind of look at it and et cetera. But Joe DeLamalure here, Sherman Smith, the All-Pro. I was never a fan of these All-Pro banners. They're a little too basic. I love how they improved them in 78, and my favorite is 79. But
yeah.
So 77, uncut.
Great
as shoot. As they say in Spanish, is mi favorito. It's my favorite in Spanish. This is a little more rare. This is 1950 Bowman. This came in four sheets. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Four sheets of 36. Okay. 144 in it. And I like this one because it's got one of my favorite cards, which is the Slingin' Sammy Bomb.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously on the front cover of the recent SWIC Enterprises Gridiron Greats was the 48 Bowman Slingin' Sammy card. So, but this card number 100 in the 50 Bowman is Sammy Bomb. And I put the 50 Bowman set together, and the last card that I really had a hard time finding in it was number 100 Sammy Bomb. So that Sammy Bach card has a special place in my heart. I absolutely adore that I have all four sheets. I have one behind me there, one there. I've got this one. One other show. This is sheet A, as they would say. You can tell because it's got the number one card, the Doak Walker.
Okay.
Right. Yep. Which most people consider this card to be his rookie card, Doak Walker, because the 48 Leaf card, Doak Walker, has him SMU, I believe. Didn't he go to SMU? I think that's it.
Yeah.
But so there's some, so, you know, the 48 Leaf has him in college uni, whereas this has him, you know, obviously as a pro for the Lions. So a lot of people consider this card number one to be his rookie card. But
yeah.
Absolutely love it. Van Buren here. Yeah, just really cool. Frank George down here, Lou the Toe Groza, cleat showing. So there's a couple collections that we really love.
My question immediately is, how many all four sheets complete do you think are still in existence today? You have any idea, you know, of any other collectors that have all four sheets like you?
No. I had three of the four sheets, and probably like 6 years ago, an auction came up with all four sheets, and I bought it and then sold my three sheets.
Okay. You
know, just to accumulate the fourth sheet.
Wow.
So I don't know. That's a good question.
I would venture to say, and I'll go out on a limb, if there's probably 6 to 8 complete sets out there, that's a lot. I really can't see, especially the early Bowman Leaf. If a trickle sheet exists, there are so few of them. They're rare. They're beyond rare. Probably the rarest pieces of card memorabilia and cards themselves you could actually collect. I mean, it's just amazing to me. Truly amazing. Yeah. Truly amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, how many sheets are floating around? The Series A sheet, you know, with the Doak Walker on it, is the hardest to find. I've only seen one of those.
Right.
And it was in that auction with all four sheets. So that's why I bought it, because I just hadn't seen one. And there might be the B, C, and D sheets floating around. There might be quite a few people with three of the four sheets. But
in,
you know, the 10, 15 years I've been collecting uncut sheets, that's the only A series sheet I found. I really like this one. 1963 Topps. Because it's the only one I've seen, and it's pretty much thick full green here, doesn't it?
Wow.
I love this one. It's colorful, and it kind of shows you how they laid this out. You don't see this very much in printing. They laid it out by color.
Right.
This isn't numerically sequenced like a lot of sheets are. This is color sequenced. Greens, yellows, blues, reds, oranges here, and then goes back to green. So the background where a lot of the ink is, it's how they're sequenced. Not numerically, it's just literally by the color, which happens to be by team, you know, quite a bit. Cardinals, you know, John David Crow here with his scout.
Right.
You know, so they, you know, they go by, you know, colors, but it's just, it's a cool sheet. Very rare. I think I've only seen a couple of these come out. I've had this one probably a decade, and I absolutely love it. You can see the Packers up here. You've got Bart Starr, Jim Taylor, Boyd Dowler, Forrest Gregg, Jim Ringo, Hank Jordan. Man.
You know, over the years and all the shows I went to, I really only handled the 1960 Fleer eight card strips, 10 card strips that I found that at a show where a dealer just blew them out to me, and I had them for years. I brought them to several nationals. I sold a few at the nationals, but I never really saw, with the exception at the national, seeing any vintage uncut sheets. Back in the 90s, early 90s, I saw some pro set sheets, some top sheets from like 89, 90, some baseball sheets. You know, the stuff that was mass produced, there was a lot more sheets coming out. I never, in all the years I went to shows, I never saw uncut sheets anywhere. Exception, like I said, at a few nationals, I saw a couple of dealers that had a few vintage, and there were more baseball than any other sport. I never saw uncut football, with the exception of the 60s Fleer that I picked up, and that was it. So
yeah, I know what you mean. For some reason, 60 Fleer, I see a lot of those strips. I don't know why. 61 Fleer second series is probably the most populous uncut sheet. I don't know why, but I see more. Probably have a dozen of those, and they rotate. So it's not the same sheet. They rotate between rows, so it's printed differently between. I started tracking those at one point. But you know, people have mentioned uncut sheets are very hard to store. They take up a lot of wall space. You know, they're a difficult thing to collect. I only frame the ones that I really like. The rest of them go into a safe room I have, and I have a piece of MDF down with a plastic top loader over the top of it. The sheets go on top of that. And then I have another piece of MDF that goes on top of it with some weights on it to keep everything flat. Dehumidifier in the room, keep it dry, and off we go. So I think I'm storing them, you know, properly.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's the big hang up with sheets. How do you store them? If you, for example, you live in a small apartment, you have no room. You barely got room for your card sets or whatever type of thing.
And so if you're rolling them and putting them in tubes and storing the tubes, you know, the sheets really have a memory to that. And how I like when I receive them, a lot of them, they have a memory, and I roll them out. I set them on that platform I have. Put the MDF on top of it, the weight, and it takes about 2-3 weeks for that memory to go away, where I can remove the MDF weights and they stay flat.
Right. And that I think that's the biggest problem with them. But man, what a incredible collection.
Yes. A couple more here. I'll get to the good stuff. This one I adore. I bought it through MSB about 10 years ago. It's the only one I've seen, a 1965 Topps Herschel uncut sheet with the Broadway Joe rookie card right here.
Wow.
And the Joe Namath rookie card's in tough shape. This entire sheet is in tough shape, but especially this top row. Joe Namath's got some cracking here. The top is, you know, really checked. You start to get down here in the middle, and these are, they're in pretty good shape. But partial sheet or not, this is the only example, trying to get the reflection out of there. Maybe I should dim my lights. Trying to get the, you know, this is the only even partial uncut sheet of 65 top 15. And I absolutely love it.
Wow. Great memories for me. That's the one set that if I sell my collection, that's the one set I hold on to the bitter end. That's my baby. Greatest memories opening up 65 Topps football.
Very cool. I love it. Yeah, that's it too. I mean, that's another reason I love this one, is just because of the link to you. This young kid up here named Lance Allworth, you know, always a smile there.
Yeah.
You've got Don Maynard.
Yeah.
This is for a partial sheet. This is really star-studded. the checklist. I'm very happy to have. That's very rare. So yeah, absolutely love the sheet. It's in. It's been beat to crap, but it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, and again, if I only had the foresight when I was 7 years old and some extra money, I would have put away some unopened wax boxes of 1965 Taps, saying to myself, 58 years later, I would have a nice nest egg there when I retired. So, all kidding aside, that's beyond rare.
I mean, by the prices of it, you should have put some 73 wax boxes away.
Yeah.
Pretty much anything. I mean, geez. Another unpacked sheet I had, and I included this in an article I wrote for Gridiron Grades.
I remember that. Yep. Beautiful.
One of my favorites. Another partial uncut sheet was about 75% of the sheet, but it's got the meat of it. It's got the Johnny U, got the Bart Starr on here. It's got the rarest card in the set, the Zeke Rutkowski.
Yep.
And I noted that in the article. This is the top 75% of an uncut sheet. I can tell by the print marks up on top, the trackers, but the Zeke Rutkowski, one of the rarest cards in the set. That it was because it was located in what I refer to as the pole position of the sheet, which is top left, where they would often align it, you know, on the cutters. But yeah, Johnny, you on here, man, this, I absolutely love this stuff. I bought this probably 15 years ago in a Huggins and Scott. And Huggins and Scott did such a good job of just finding little rare things. You're like, wow, where the hell are they getting this stuff? But
right.
Really cool sheet. I absolutely love this. And this helped break the myth of the 57 set coming out in series.
Yeah.
Since you have, half the set, you know, about, you know, 75 or, you know, I think 78, you know, that just the popularity of, you know, the second half of the set, anything past like 100, how rare it is. But right. the fact that even upper 100 level cards appeared on this sheet, you know, kind of dispelled the myth that there were two series. The second series wasn't collected as much as the first series. So that sheet helped, you know, kind of dispel that myth. And then,
unbelievable.
Yeah. So you can see, I really love the vintage ones. And I have one last one. And this is by far probably my favorite. It is a 48 leaf uncut sheet. And this is actually three partial uncut sheets.
Right.
So there's this right here is a piece. This right here is a piece. And this entire half is a piece. And what I did is, and there's some overlap. I can see like there's a four card overlap here. So I know they weren't one sheet right. cut up into right. pieces. This was several sheets cut up into pieces and they happen to overlap. And they were missing those two cards. And when I had this framed, I decided not to put those in just as a reminder, how rare, how tough this is.
But right.
There's card number one, the Sid Luckman. And this moves print wise, it moves down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So it's kind of weird. Most of them go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. This is numbered this way, but if you reverse it, so it was pretty obvious they ran this through the printer upside down or the cutter upside down, or they didn't worry about it. They ran it that way. This is Series A, 1 through, it's a 98 card set. This is 7 by 7. It's, 7 cards by 7 cards. Some of them are turned horizontally, depends on if they're horizontal or vertical. Absolutely love it.
The 48 leaf set, and I've said this before too, putting that set together for the high numbers was just absolutely... Oh. Utterly ridiculous. And again, I have so many fillers in my second series. I mean, they're basically poor to fair condition. They're all bent up. They got writing on them, bad creases, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So I know they haven't been trimmed, number one. But number two, I also realize there, for whatever reason, that second series just did not see much sale.
Absolutely.
distribution or anything, which is amazing to, you know, to think about how many years later. And, yeah. And again, you know 48 Leaf inside and out. You know, to trim a lot of those cards just to get a better grade on them is so sad. But I look at my 48 Leaf set. It doesn't look nice, but I know they're all original cards, and they're cards that have, you know, sold out of a pack, so on and so forth. So
right. Just star-studded. Sammy Baugh down here, Whitey Wister, Johnny Lujack, George McAfee, Bob Waterfield, Oregon great. You think about the rookie cards on here. Kenny Washington, yeah. Doak Walker's rookie card, Bobby Lane, the Mad Bomber, you know, Bulldog Turner, Sid Luckman, one of my favorite cards in a set. I don't know why. Charlie Choo Choo Justice. I love the purple around his pads and just the look. Steve Van Buren, Bullet Bill Dudley, George Connor. I mean, this is just riddled with rookie cards, as the 48 Leaf is 48 Leaf set is notorious for.
Yeah, that's a great display piece. Unbelievable.
Yes. Yeah. By far the cornerstone of my collection. Just my Leaf or my uncut sheets. The 57, 65, and 48 are just my favorites. They're just they're just such pieces of artwork too.
And a complete set of the 50 Bowman set and sheets. I mean, that's incredible too. All right. So again, for our audience purposes, how many do you have a count of how many uncut sheets you have from 48 to wherever you ended?
I don't actually. I don't because the ones that are I need to frame more because I've got some really cool ones. That I haven't bothered framing yet. That also came in rolls that I needed to flatten out. So I've kind of hit pause on my collection, you know, the last couple of years. Yeah. You know, just mostly because of our house fire and stuff. So plan on rekindling that. I need to sift through, like we were talking about, you know, pre-show, sift through, decide what I've outgrown that I don't want to collect anymore, and you know, kind of send it off to auction house. And but I would guess I have 220 to 250 uncut sheets.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say you have to have at least a couple hundred, if not more.
Yeah, that'd be my guess.
That's great.
They're stacked pretty high.
I can imagine. But, you know, it's a great collectible. And like you're saying, I agree with you 100%. They can't be counterfeited. So you can't take a sheet like that, even with laser printers today, and try to get a 132-card sheet through a laser printer and try to duplicate it and call it a real whatever 1970 sheet or whatever the case might be. That's not going to happen. So that's truly a great collectible. That also goes back to, in your theme, you do the wax pack, the display box, the uncut sheet display. That's really the history of the card in many, many ways. I remember years ago, and I'm pretty sure his name was Dave Richardson out of Nevada. He had a great wrapper and display box collection. That's all he collected. He never collected any cards. He just collected the wrappers and the display box, not just in football, but in all the sports. And I kind of got to know him. We corresponded way back when years ago. And I never really thought of, you know, to me, that was a real futuristic vision to collect those wrappers at that time, to collect those display boxes. Because what happened in a store? The display box sold all its packs. You threw it out. That was it. It was gone. And I still remember in the card shop I worked at, I said to him, "What are you doing with the boxes?" "Well, I'm going to throw them out. What am I going to do with them?" I said, "You should hold on to them. I mean, you know, they'll probably be valuable one day." But take into consideration like this: the explosion in 1990 to this day.
Yeah.
How many wrappers exist and how many empty display boxes exist of the hundreds of types of cards that were issued during that time frame? I know of no one who actually kept up with everything. And even I gave up in the 90s when I said, well, let me just get one pack of each card set that came out. I'll put it away. And I gave up on that because when you start adding 40, 50, 60 different packs, I didn't even know what was what after a while.
Yeah. You know? So, yeah. I think 3 years ago during, you know, COVID, or 2.5 years ago, I went on Target and, you know, wanted to buy some stuff. I had no idea what this crap was. Where they're like, hey, do you want the rocket box or do you want the, you know, the booster pack box? I'm like, what is the difference? What the hell? I mean, I just ended up buying something that looked fancy and I did it out of boredom. I mean, but I was literally like, well, let me get two boxes and maybe I'll open one. I never bothered to open one just because I have no idea what the stuff is. Right. I have zero passion for the stuff. I don't know. But I collected display boxes for a while, and they really scratch an OCD itch. They're kind of cool because, you know, you buy them. You can buy a brick of, you know, of the white foam. You can measure what the box is. You can slice off that, insert it. And when you get about five or six of them, you go up and shrink wrap it. They're kind of cool to display. And then I saw somebody who had a, you know, typewritten what each one was, unshrink wrap them, type that up, put them back in, shrink wrap them again.
Yeah.
You know, they're really cool to display, but man, those take up a lot of room. Here at the Uncut Sheet guy saying display boxes take up a lot of room, but you have to have a bookcase shelf filled with them, or, you know, some sort of display case with them. And man, that takes a lot of room. At least the Uncut Sheets hang on the wall. They don't take up floor space, but you know, boxes, you need shelves or something like that. Yeah, I had a hard time finding them just because they took up some room.
I had at my peak about 50 display boxes, but my earliest box was like 77, 78. I had a lot of 80s. I had a lot of early 90s stuff, but I used to put the white packing peanuts in them. Like you're saying, the foam, I put the packing peanuts in it. It held it. I never would shrink wrap them, but I would just display them. But then they got to, it was too much. And I said, I can never finish this. So what's the point of it? You know, I've gone as far as I could. I sold it locally to a guy.
Ups and downs of collecting. How many things have you started to collect, got bored, or went, hell with it. I'm a completionist. I'm not going to complete the set. And you move on. I mean, that's why I love your Mayo, you know, story. We're like, I'm collecting it. I know I'll never get, you know, the anonymous card, but I'm still collecting it. I mean, is that hard for you to know you will likely never finish the Mayo set?
It's brutal for me. And I always have in the back of my mind, finishing the 35 Chickle, which is unobtainable now, and the 52 Bowman Large. Those were the three sets that I always felt would complete the run that I originally set out to put together years ago. But, you know, I just basically stopped 48 to 2015, and that's it. And I think the decision was made for me. When Topps stopped producing, I said, this is it for me. I'm not going to switch over and say, you know, 2016, I got a score set on whatever. It was never the same again. And again, when we moved down here, we were stuck in the condo for the 5.5 months. I would go to Walmart and I'd buy a couple packs and just to open them in the condo. And it did nothing for me. I didn't know half the guys.
Yeah.
The cards were, you know, the inserts were just ridiculous. I couldn't keep track of everything. So I have like a 400 count box of 21 and 22 football cards that I open, you know, that I've been selling off piecemeal here and there at a show, you know, like a dollar card here and there. But I'm just saying it wasn't fun. So I'm glad I stopped at 2015 because that was the last year I actually opened a Topps Wax box and had to pick up extra cards to finish the set. I did finish the set. I'm complete from 48 to 2015. And I got to call it, you know, that's not a bad accomplishment as a run, you know, those 92 sets. And again, they're not all near mint. The early cards are really beat up. If I find any upgrades, I try to upgrade, you know, where I can. And I just put it that, you know, leave it like that. But
if you're missing the Frank Gifford card in the 52 large set, there's one for sale at Memory Lane right now. It's a PSA 9, but it'll fit really nicely in your set. It's 22,000. Right now, Bob, that includes the big.
Yeah, I at this stage of the game, I could do a lot more with 22,000 than put it in a PSA 9 Gifford. But, I still get enjoyment opening up a binder, looking at the cards,
yes.
A lot of memories. That's what it's all about for me. And I've said this numerous times, that's the last thing to go. I mean, I literally look at my collection every day. I look at something of it, and it's fun for me. It's still fun. You know, everything else is secondary type of thing, and that's it. You know, one quick point. We're almost out of time. One quick point. You're talking about publications. I have been shocked to see how much media guides have gone up over the past 3 years. The few teams that actually are putting out a printed media guide, they're going for $40 and $50 a piece.
Oh, wow. And
I am just shocked by that. I mean, I can remember the Packers media guide was like $20, $19.95, which I thought was a fair price. I mean, you got a big book there. You know, it's a book. But to see now it's $40 and $50, and I'm just blown away by that. And I just said, okay, here's another thing that I'm not going to collect anymore because of the cost. And all I'm really looking for is the update for the new season. Everything else is pretty much the same in it, you know.
Ooh, who was it? Didn't we have a guest who had a Cowboys or a Packers? I think it was the Cowboys one from the 70s where they're like, hey, this is before social media. This is what they handed out, you know, to prospective players.
Yeah.
Come to Dallas.
Yep. Yeah.
Was that Steve Wolf who got that? I forget who, but it was a media guide, but it was literally an advertisement to come. Please come.
It was either that or that that guy who, I can't think of his name now, who does the Cowboy cards, designs them. He had that price guide out. That was a long time ago. I know Steve has some media guides and some nice prospectus pieces that they handed out, so on and so forth. So that's great. Great. All right. A couple more minutes. Joe, I'm speechless. I love looking at your stuff. It's great. I love those uncut sheets. Just a great collectible, very unique in the whole scheme of things. I do have to compliment you on your t-shirt today, your Pattsville Maroons t-shirt. Very, very cool. I have nothing that compares to that. I just have my Packer attire. I am planning on getting a couple of Panther shirts because I've been commenting to a lot of people about what I feel is wrong with the team. And one fellow down here.
Of course you have.
He says, well, why don't you call the team and give them all your stuff? And I said, well, okay. I just put this in perspective. You got a first-round draft choice quarterback. He really honestly doesn't improve in 17 games. There's something wrong there, you know? So you got to try to think of something else, try to do something different. But I think I'll just throw a curveball at everybody. I'll buy a few Carolina Panther shirts and have them in any grocery store we go to. I see the Panther Miller Lite display everywhere, so I gotta go to the guy at the grocery store we shop at the most down here and say, "What do you guys do with that display? I'd be interested." And he'll say, "Just come Brenda in the back, throw it in your car, no big deal." You
know, Brenda would love seeing a Carolina Panther, you know, Bud Light display
behind you, right, sticking up on the back here. So.
Bob, when you wear a Carolina Panther sweatshirt, I want a picture of that. Just you smiling, wearing something other than Packer green. Just,
I know.
It'd be so foreign for me to see you in a Carolina Panther shirt or jersey.
Well, my intention was when I came down here, I was going to get as many college football shirts. I got my – actually, I can wear my university – I'm sorry. Yeah, my – University of North Carolina football shirt. I've worn that a few times around here.
UNC, baby, Michael Jordan.
I'll put that on one day for a show, and then I'll throw it to
you. It'd be like, you know, it'd be like seeing me in something other than Seahawk green or Oregon Duck green. You know, I mean, you know, I look right at home wearing Pottsville Maroon 1925 championship. You know, I look right at home. I make this look damn good, but. You know, the other thing I make look good is a Steve Largent jersey.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. No, Super Bowl Sunday last year, I wore a Red Grange jersey to the party, and I made my daughter wear a Steve Largent jersey. Right. Everybody was confused. It's like the Bears and the Seahawks aren't playing. What are you doing? I'm like, man, this is football day. You know, red grain. I'm wearing a throwback, baby.
Right. I normally wear my Bart Starr jersey on Super Bowl Sunday. And I'm kind of impressed. I've basically seen every Super Bowl since the first one. So that kind of scares me how old I am now. But to see 58 or whatever is 59 Super Bowls now, it's truly amazing. It's just not like it was in the beginning, the first 20 or so. It's a little commercialized now, just to say.
Yeah. Is it 59?
It's 58 or 59, because 19, 67 is the first one.
Yeah, I will admit, Bob, the other day I had to go to Wikipedia and look up the Super Bowl winners starting in like 90, you know, so I had to go back and like, oh yeah, that's right. That 49er run, that Cowboy run. Oh man, I remember that. And every Super Bowl, I was like, I remember that. I remember where I was. Oh, I missed that one. I was in the Navy. You know, I remember going outside at halftime at that Cowboy Buffalo one and playing football and limping back in and watching the rest of it at a party. And it was cool, you know, to recap the winners. But like, I couldn't remember who won the Super Bowl 5 years ago. I'm like, shouldn't I know that? You know, yeah. I mean,
well, you know, you're processing all this information. I really don't, I'm sure a true football fanatic memorized every winner and loser in every Super Bowl. But you know what? I got to look back at a few too, because there's some I truly don't remember type of thing. But, I do have a visualization of a lot of them, especially the early ones, watching at home with my father on the black and white TV, being excited that the game was coming on, so on and so forth. So, but it's just not the same now. And if the Packers aren't playing, I really, you know, I'm going to root for the Chiefs. I'm not ashamed to say it. The magazine has connections to them, as we know, and it's, I got to root for them. They're a good thing. And as I tell everybody down here, my wife's hairdresser's grandson is Noah Gray, number 83 on the Chiefs. So,
wife's hairdresser's grandson. We need a flow chart for that. Just to, you're getting to 7 degrees. You know, does your wife, friend, hairdresser's niece, does he know Kevin Bacon?
Oh, so well, her hairdresser, that's her grandson, Noah Gray. So,
oh, okay. All right.
That's the daughter's. Because she has two daughters. That's the daughter's son, her grandson. So
yeah, I like dynasties. I love the, you know, Cowboys dynasties, the Steelers dynasties. I love it when a team, especially in this era of free agency, can put together a team that can, you know, that can make it to the big game and win it. Yeah. You know, 3 out of 6 years. I love the Patriots dynasty. And so I am really digging this, you know, Kansas City Chiefs dynasty that we're seeing and just enjoying it. So I also will be rooting for the Chiefs twofold. I just said that I love dynasties. And number two is I cannot root for another team that's in the same division as the Seahawks, the NFC West.
Yeah. I hear you.
I still don't like the Raiders, the old AFC West, when the Seahawks were in the AFC West. I'm still not a fan of the Raiders. Yeah. And it's just because old AFC West rivalries never die.
Yeah, exactly.
I need a hush button.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But,
all right, we're out of time. We're going to wrap it up. Joe, thanks for being on. We'll be back next week. We are working on several guests. And we're trying to get our times all set up. And when we do, boy, we're going to have a blitz of 3-4 shows all at once when it all comes down. So thanks for watching. If you're not a subscriber to Gridiron Greats Magazine, what are you waiting for?
Be waiting for.
Check out our website, gridirongreatsmagazine.com. Take care. Thanks for watching.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude. And I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.